That's the way you start these things. Haven't been at one yet this year, but I remember we used to beat that thing last year. Wow, I didn't think too many people would show up at 9 o'clock at night to talk about your government. There's something going on. I figured there'd be two or three people here. We could sit around and chat for a while. I don't know if I'm prepared for all this, but we can make a stab at it. I think I look around and see quite a few people that haven't sat in on some of the ombudsman sessions. How many of you haven't been in on the ombudsman? Have not? Okay, that's a few. That's the reason, one of the reasons that we're having this session. The other is so that Carol, and I don't see him yet, can complain about the government's forestry service. He wants to tell us all about that story and the problems he's had. We were talking about this at faculty meeting. I thought it'd be kind of fun to kick around the idea of our personal relationship with the government and the relationship that an ombudsman could have, maybe, that might come out. It's all up to you. You know, we can talk about anything you want to. But just to give you a little bit of a background of an ombudsman, I'll try to do that in about 5 minutes. I served as an ombudsman for 6 months for the state of Minnesota. I was on loan from the corporation that I worked for. Back where I come from in Minnesota, they have a habit of loaning executives to the state government to help them do things, and so I got loaned to them to help set up an ombudsman program. I'd never done anything like that before. Got a chance to get involved and see what happens. And really what an ombudsman does in most governmental situations is he gets in between two people, or a citizen, or a recipient of service who is unhappy about something that has happened to him or hasn't happened to him. And that's a major kind of role that an ombudsman gets into. He has the power to come in and investigate, look over the problem, and report, but then that's as far as he can go. He has no power to come in and say to someone, you have to change that. At least not in this country. They do that in Scandinavian countries, in Sweden for sure, and I think in Norway and Denmark too. The ombudsman can, he's really almost a fourth part of the government. He can come into an executive in the executive branch and say, you change that. Of course, he can be challenged and go to the courts too. But the way the ombudsmen are going in this country, that's not happening because of our process. Now, there are all kinds of things that are happening around here that are important to this kind of subject. Like Al Pitcher had a session this afternoon on freedom, or what's the objectives, what is the vocation of our country. And he talked about some of the things we might talk about tonight. Now, there are two kinds of things that we could discuss this issue about. One is the personal relationship between you and somebody in the government. Like maybe your garbage collector is a garbage collector for the city, and he forgets to pick up your garbage. And then he doesn't come by maybe a couple times in a row, and you're kind of mad at him. But what can you do today? Right now you can call him up and get a hold of him and ask him to do something about it. If he refuses, then you can go to his boss, whoever that is. And if he refuses, you can go to the mayor or the city council or the city manager. If he doesn't do anything about it, you can go to the city council. And then I don't know where you go from there. Maybe get a lawyer, you know. And some people do if it's a serious enough offense. Now, there are four levels at least right there within city government. If you're dealing with the county, you've got about the same four. If you're dealing with the state, you've got four more, so up to 12. And if you're dealing with the federal government, you've got at least four more. But you toss a couple others in there, too. So you could easily get involved with many, many, many layers in government. And that's one of the problems we might want to kick around kind of too. It's one of the big barriers I see in trying to influence the government. Now, the person-to-person problems is one thing we could talk about, one area. And then trying to influence the bigger issues that affect all of us, like the war or taxes or welfare or something like that. That's another way. Now, that's a tough one, too. That's much tougher. Dealing with your garbage man, that's not so bad. But if you want to try to stop the bombing in Cambodia, you've got yourself another problem. And we could talk about both. Now, I think one of the principles that I've learned, I'm just going to toss out a few ideas and then we can go to questions. One of the principles I've learned in dealing on an individual basis, if you've got problems with your garbage man, the further up the chain you go, the less likelihood you have of getting a satisfactory solution in a reasonable time frame. Unless you know somebody. And then if you know somebody, then you can do all right. Like whenever I got involved with the school board election once, and I got to know a whole bunch of guys over in the school administration. And so if something happens at school that I don't like, I call up somebody and he can help me very quickly get through the maze. But when I first moved to town, I couldn't get anyone to talk to me about any school problems. And there's an awful lot of personal stuff, you know. And so I've made it a policy the last few years to try to get to know everybody. I know the mayor and the county commissioners and the guys that run the school. I really do. You know, that's what you've got to do. And that's one way you can really make some things happen. But even with all that, it's very, very difficult to influence your government. And there's other ways of doing it. You can join a political party and become very active. And of course, if your political party happens to win, then you're in pretty good shape, usually. I mean, you've got some influence. Or if you gave money, if you gave lots of money, or you go out and raise funds, you have some amount of influence. But as I said, even if you do a lot of these things and have a lot of influence, it's very, very difficult to influence the government to move, I think. That's a hypothesis I want to toss out and talk about. I can give you a couple of examples. Maybe I should walk you through two that I went through this year and to show you how complex it gets. Yeah, let's try that. At least try one anyway. The corporation I work for it runs a daycare center. We found that in order to keep down the turnover of women, particularly the workforce, it was to our advantage to set up a daycare center. And we set it up, and the federal government funds 3/4 of it. Well, early this year, the federal government decided to just shut everything down. And to make it a very simple thing, that's what was happening. All these daycare centers were shutting down. And we thought it was a very, very bad idea because we had helped a bunch of people get off of welfare and get onto the working rolls and start paying taxes. And so I sat down with a bunch of guys and we figured out how much it would cost to shut the thing down and how much it would cost to keep going. And we found out that if the county would pick up the share to make it go, they would pay $60,000 to keep the daycare center going. And if it shut down, it would cost them $90,000 in increased welfare payments because everybody would have to quit. So we figured that's pretty good. And we really had hard evidence. We did some good research. The University of Minnesota came in and was unbiased and all that stuff. And so we made a little slide presentation and went down to the county commissioners. They didn't care. They were so confused by everything that was happening, they didn't have time. They cared. They really cared. But they had everything just caving in on them all over the place. And I didn't know quite what to do. But I was invited out to speak at a thing called the Ripon Society. That's a Republican group that meets once a year, a Minnesota group, for a weekend. And they take on issues. And one of the issues was daycare in the morning and criminal justice in the afternoon. That was really my cup of tea because I'm into both of those things. So in the morning, I went over there and decided that I'd show this little slide presentation on this crazy thing that the government was doing, you know, increasing our welfare costs by cutting down and saving money, which, you know. And so I did, and it just happened that the county commissioner, the head county commissioner was there, and his wife, and a bunch of other people were there, and they really, really got the thing in their mind. And that afternoon, President Nixon's chief speechwriter came to make a speech. And he'd been one of the founders of this society. And he made his little speech, and then asked the questions, and people started bombarding him with this thing. And he gave some old, you know, palette of answers saying, oh, everything's okay. And they said, no, but it's not. And they started reading off numbers, and I got my program out, and we went through the thing. and he really, really felt bad, though he was very defensive, he felt bad. And this was on a Saturday. And on Wednesday, they changed the whole thing, and they backed off. Now, I don't think we had that much to do with it, but at least I had a chance to really input right straight up to the top. That was sheer luck. I mean, there's nothing more than sheer luck. But if you stumble around enough in those kinds of things, once in a while that happens. Sometimes you can really go toward a purpose. And I were involved in a school board election one time, involved with taxes and special education and things like that. And we decided that we'd really get involved, and so we helped a candidate for the school board, happened to be our neighbor, run for the school board. And we got and helped him write his speeches and get everything organized. And he got on and really helped get the objectives that we had. So the political process can work for you very well, too, on the local level. Of course, there's obviously a lot more control on the local level than there is on the federal level. This afternoon, Al talked about one of the freedoms in this country is the freedom to participate. That's one of the basic things that we started out with. And then he began to talk, and we all began to talk about some of the interference with that. But the interference of the government began to what we've said, maximize our self-initiative, that is, to give us more opportunity. But then the interference began to take on other characteristics of people coming down and telling us what they thought we ought to do. And I think that's where an awful lot of the problems begin. And lately we've gotten very cynical because we talk a lot about the government trying to manipulate us, particularly the Watergate thing where there's an alleged takeover of the political process and things like that. Now we can talk the whole spectrum from what can we do about that to what can we do about what happens when your garbage man won't pick up your garbage. So I guess I should just toss out the question with that kind of background. You know, what can we do? Does anybody have any examples of things that's happened to them where they really got frustrated? And we could talk through what might be done or what you did do. Oh, yeah. In other words, he was on the other side of the issue already. Well, that's really
but
a problem.
He was riding the fence. That's what
they were doing. It was a maybe.
That's very difficult when you get to dealing with a problem and the guy won't tell you which way he's going to go. Yeah, I ran into a lot of that. The guys, or even worse, he'll agree with you. And then he'll agree with the other guy, too. That's a real politician. And they just keep rolling along. And then sometimes they never get forced to make a decision. I don't think.
I don't know if this is true in other cities, but in Oklahoma City, on paper, we have something called Action Line. Mm-hmm. And they take care of a lot of the small things, like the garbage collecting, and streets that need to be lighted, and roads that need to be fixed, and refunds, and that sort of thing. I don't know, they couldn't do anything about the strike. It's a big help, because a lot of times, if you ask more to do
yeah, and there's an awful lot of that. That seems to be going on all over the country, on both television and in the newspapers.
Yeah.
The newspapers have got a lot of clout.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they go after this with really vindictive spirit, and people get a little bit afraid of them. Somebody asked me a minute ago what the difference between that and an ombudsman is, and the major difference, there are several, but one I can think of right off the top, is that an ombudsman has legal authority to go in and look at any records or any files or investigate any way he wants to, and he can call hearings, which a newspaper can't do. They can hold mock hearings on television. Seems to me they did that they did do some pretty sneaky things on television. There was one in Minneapolis where they were looking at security guards. Did anybody see that? Wow. They went around and interviewed the guard companies about what they did, and they, of course, everything was just great. We hire people very carefully, we screen them, and we really protect our customers. Then they went and got an ex-con that had just gotten out of Stillwater, and they got him hired by a couple of these companies, and he ended up on the job guarding an NSP power station in a hospital. They gave him a gun, they didn't tell him how to use it, and he was, he was on parole. That's pretty good. A lot of evidence. So they had a thing right out there in public. And what was really interesting is that they would go in after they had the evidence and interview the head of the company again and say, tell me again what you do. And right on television. And he'd tell them, and they'd say, but here, we've got this guy, and then they'd blah, and they'd go around. It is no part. I don't know if that's fair, but it sure was effective. That would be a fun thing to do with, an ombudsman, to make, have real lots of fun with that. And I guess I mentioned to you the other day that in Denmark or somewhere, they do something like that. When you get a complaint, they put it out in the paper. They just publish the whole thing. They cut out the bad language and they publish it. And then they get a result and they publish it, just about like they did on television. They don't ask anybody. They don't tell anybody. Just boom, there it is. Out in the paper every day, or a couple times a day, a week. Yes, sir.
I think that the ombudsman is probably a good idea, and there are some companies that have it going now. That Derrick company over.
Yeah, American Hoist and Derrick.
American Hoist and Derrick seems to be doing a good job with it. And probably, in my mind, it makes more sense to go into the corporation and have it done than into the government level, because without the power to change, too often it falls on deaf ears once the recommendations are made. At least in the federal standpoint, that's true.
Yeah.
But But where I see the problem coming is the total lack of concern of the people as to what's going on and how it's being done. And I question whether one person or a group of people in that kind of a role can be very effective if the balance of the people really aren't very concerned as to what
you mean going. Like the general population?
General population.
Yeah, you were reading my notes here. I was going to go on to that in a little bit. I had down here a little note that says the Bill of Rights survey. Remember that survey they took of the people and asked them how they felt about the Bill of Rights in sort of a clever way, and found that well over 50% felt that Bill of Rights really didn't apply anymore?
I mean, if we're concerned about whether the fellow is picking up your garbage or not, but nobody knows that the president of the garbage company is taking a rake off every day, or how they got the contract, those are the kind of things that we ought to be attacking with some vigorousness that we haven't even considered, or we're just starting to consider.
Yeah, and how do you do that? That's a...
So you can't do it by writing letters, but other than just voting, and there's more to it than that.
That's true. That's right. How do you feel about it? I mean, what's the
problem? Well, I spent a year in politics. I worked as an assistant to the Secretary of State of Washington. I also worked as an advancement and organizer in Governor Evans' last campaign in the state. The statement I said about taking time, talent, and money is true, because I was just one cog in a big wheel, and I didn't have that much influence on politics, on the campaign, or on what's happening in the state. It takes money. Boy, those guys with money are the ones that were counting the state. Now, I can name names and
sure.
A whole bit, and people don't realize that.
But it takes many people that have hours that they can give.
Oh, it takes that too. But they're not the most influential.
They're not the people that get recognized.
But if they weren't there, a lot of things that are accomplished would not be accomplished.
Oh,
it depends on the kind of issue you're dealing with, too. If you're
I'm talking about a political campaign.
Yeah, I thought you were leading to what happens afterward. Now, the guys
yeah,
put lots of money into it, then they come back and want favors.
Well, yeah, they want favors and sometimes they do.
And you were saying, and I think this is what you said, and I agree with it, that the guys that donate the money, they're the highest in the influential order. The workers are next, and then whoever's left is...
Citizens.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if those people with money were more recognized, because they don't want to be recognized. They just want concessions.
Yeah. Two different ways of recognizing.
They would know what's going on, and they do something about it more.
That's right.
Is there a way we could eliminate money from the political processes?
I don't know. What do you think? You've had more experience than I have.
Well, there's been some movement in this state trying to do that. There was an initiative, 276, that was passed by people to try and change that system, but now it's been fought out in the courts, and you know, the lobbyists are tied up again. So, you know.
The money's tied up again.
Yeah, that's right.
It seems like the source of all these problems always boils down to that dollar, doesn't it? So
yep.
Maybe that could be eliminated, maybe we'd have a lot better political process going.
I think that power and money are pretty much the same thing.
Does that necessarily have to be the case?
Well, in our society, it is.
It is, but does it have to be?
No, it doesn't have to.
So maybe there's something we can do as Christians.
You spend your money, your time, and your talents upon it.
Well, that's
what... There's some other alternatives to that, though. The people have come... with John Gardner's Common Cartwright, I think I've done an awfully good job. And in 4 or 5 years ago, before it was determined the level of importance of money, or at least before it was determined to those people who were not within the mill group, Gardner got a group of people together to try to identify the money people. And I think that as the information spreads on the things that the Common Cause group is doing, we have an opportunity as a citizens group to identify in big round terms what's going on in the state government and the federal government.
Weren't they part of the Kia forcing out this disclosure of who had donated money. Right. I guess that came out of the Watergate.
They were the people, I think, to put that issue onto the floor originally.
Yeah, and at least they're going to get those that donated before that date, right. And the Watergate pulled out the big corporations, or someone did.
And they were also the people that put to the court system the corporation giving campaigns.
United Airlines. That terrifies a businessman when he gets caught like that. He goes to jail.
Sure.
They have some real tricky ways of getting around this. Both unions and business have ways of, the union set up foundations, I believe, that are non-profit and donate to those. And businessmen give directly of their own, but somehow they quite often will get a kickback from the company then in terms of wages. You know, they want you to give $20,000, so they'll give you a $20,000 raise when you something like that. And that's how these guys are doing that stuff. And that's patently illegal, and yet they've been getting by with it for years. And it's the judicial system just kind of winks at that, I guess, and nobody seems to agree about it. It's a common cause of one, or something like it. There are several others that are springing up like that around that are going to try to influence elections. There's one group, it's a Democratic group. No, it's not either, it's a nonpartisan, but they've supported more Democrats than Republicans. That screens all of the front runners, all of the people that are running for the Senate, for instance, and then they will analyze them and say that of all these people, it looks like we better put our money behind these five guys because they've got the toughest election, and they look like the guys that are really going to do something good. And so you can use your money to support them.
I don't know if this would even fit under something an ombudsman could do something about, but I read a while back about, I guess in South Carolina, one of the Carolinas where Strom Thurmond is senator from, and there was an eminent domain issue for a highway going through there, and some land he owned, and some land was owned by just some other private parties, and he received some great amount of money per acre. Much greater, in fact, for acres than every other party who had to sell land for this highway. And what kind of protesting could be done against something like that, you know, assuming favor or something like that?
Well, that's been going on for years, and no one's done anything about it. I don't know, maybe we're in a changing climate. Does anyone have any ideas about that? I sure don't.
Situation in Missoula is very similar to that. A county supervisor had purchased some land that we went over, I think, to the airport before I moved there. But a group of citizens just formed a group called Concerned Citizens, and they just went after him, gathered the data, how much money he made, and took him to court. Because there are rules against people in public office benefiting financially from their office.
I should think the most natural thing was to be have him impeached. Yeah.
Strom Thurmond is a United States Senator and quite more powerful than this other guy in Missouri.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good friend of Richard Nixon.
Right. Yeah. And impeachment would be very hard. But that's the thing that was supposed to happen. I mean, according to the Constitution, if a guy gets caught doing something like that, even if it's legal, they still can impeach him. And some people have been impeached in the past for that. Some judges have been impeached for kind of goofy things they do.
So money enters in there again.
Yes.
If you start a program like that, you've got to have some money for it.
You're attacking an old American system.
Yeah. So you can't really start getting something like that unless you've got some money behind you to help you fight this other system.
In Chicago, they organized a citizens action program. Just fairly sophisticated, high-level, multi-purpose organization. And it began to try to find issues. It really has a kind of political purpose. But it looked for example, it dealt with assessors, loopholes and assessments, and it really uncovered things. And with the cooperation of newspapers, it really put some real dents in the daily machine with the newspaper, it was able to uncover a lot of stuff. Now they had a lot of staff. They had Saul Alinsky's know-how because he was using it as a training ground for his students, and he had a lot of money to train the students. And they had people who did nothing but research, and they're very sophisticated about political action. And if you want to go into it with some system and order and theory, and you can get some committed people and some money, you can do something in the city. Because this group has done it, and now the place where all kinds of people are going before grand juries on all kinds of issues, it's really stirred up kind of forms now. But unless you have that kind of a political arm, I don't think you're going to get very far.
You've got to have awfully good organization.
You may, by virtue of having some knowledge and some citizens, stop some things, but you're not really going to attack it. The way the system operates, unless you've got fairly sophisticated operations, but there's no reason, I think, in principle, why every major city couldn't have such an organization.
So what we seem...
citizens determined to do it.
What we seem to be coming to is the feeling, I think, in this group, is the feeling that if we operate, it can be more effective with a lot less money by operating through the system itself as it exists. But by and large, most of us don't have the wherewithal to do that. So then you got to come at it from the outside through something like that. And those things take an awful lot of organization and quite a bit of money.
So they also take some interest. See, one of the problems with most of us is we don't have enough interest.
Or time.
Well,
you're not going to give up your money.
If you have the interest, you're going to
find the time.
Right. But the people who run things and who put in the effort have self-interest, material interest. They make money off of the effort. And if you put other people with other interests, then you're just kind of balancing interest. To get people who still have the so-called common interest, whatever that is, at heart, is very difficult because they cop out with ease and without, they may stay around for a while, but organizing them is a real problem.
Yeah, keeping on that, as you said, stay around for a while. I was just thinking of a group out in Minnesota that's trying to change the Department of Corrections from the outside. And it's the Department of Corrections. I've been... Okay, and not in that direction. Okay. And they're a citizens group, and they represent a large segment of the community. They've got the clergy and laymen concerned. There's a large group of clergymen involved, Christians involved with the laymen. The Urban League in St. Paul is involved, and there are a bunch of other groups, and they amount to several hundred people that really are donating their time and have a lot of influence and some money. But they aren't getting anywhere. Now, as you were talking, Al, I was trying to figure out why, and I just realized that the Corrections Department has started a very interesting process of developing a counter-campaign to change things sort of along the lines that they want changed, but not as fast and more comfortable. So they've developed, the government has developed a strategy that will help them stop and say, we are changing things. What are you hollering about? We're doing things. And they're talking about public relations now, getting out and try to put some frosting over this mound of whatever it is. And so that's a strategy that's used quite often, and that tends to cool off campaigns, I guess, against them.
It's hard to get citizens interested. The tax thing affects everybody. That's one of the reasons the group took this issue, is that they were dealing with pollution, and they found, in spite of all of our yammer, that most people weren't interested in the pollution issue. You couldn't get them roused about it, or I do very much about it, but on the tax issue, assessment issue, it affected school districts, all kinds of districts, thousands.
Yeah, you can get people out to a meeting about taxes. When we had our school board problem in the town that we live in, Bloomington, Minnesota, taxes had been going up and up and up, and everybody had just gotten their recent tax, and a small group of people decided to have a meeting, and so they advertised it and said it would be in some school, And they expected maybe 100 or 2 people. 2,000 people showed up. They had to have the session twice in one evening. And they formed an organization of over 2,000 people and were very successful. But it was the pocketbook that got them involved. And then they got into all the other issues after that, and it was kind of nice because people really got an education about the school system and the government.
What resulted from it?
2 members were elected to the school board that were endorsed by this group outside of the political process. Both parties in town backed away from it like a hot potato, wouldn't touch it. And this group moved in as one political party, ran their 2 candidates, and just wiped out everybody else. Yes, taxes came down.
It got
to be very complicated. Assessments went up, and then the state came along and they redistributed everything. But our property taxes went down a couple $100, but I think my state income tax went up, so I probably didn't come up. But there were other issues that we were trying to get at, like we were interested in special education, making sure that that didn't get knocked out during this tax push. And we were surprised to find that everybody that was involved in this thing felt the same way. And in fact, special education got a big boost in the school at a time when money was scarce, which was really, that was our main motive for going in there. And
we had an interesting thing in Oregon this year. We had a special election on May 1st. We had a sales tax. Oregon's one of the few states in the union that does not have a sales tax. So there's a special election in which we have a special sales tax for schools. But it was voted down. So now we're in the process of having another tax.
Wow.
But soon, the interesting part of it, from what it described to me or us, what we understood, was that the taxes actually were only supposed to apply to people who were in the upper income bracket. And the lower income bracket were not going to. In fact, they were even.
People in Oregon had such a suspicion about our governor that, well, he had been doing pretty much that was. Well, to us, it wasn't quite on the up and up, and we weren't going to take any of his. Yeah.
Any other Oregonians here?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Let's not get on that.
Did a lot of work. We'd have a special session on that at midnight in the sauna, huh?
The state of Washington had an interesting taxpayer revolt this year. The legislative session of the last few minutes this year passed a bill to raise the legislator's salary from about 3,500 feet, or something like this, over to 10,000 a year for their 90-day session for the year. It included, I don't know, 14,000 for the governor, or more than that,
up to 35,000.
Up to 35,000. And the state courts, the justices, the judges, and it was, we taxpayers just felt helpless about this. I mean, nothing is new, a last minute thing like this. You go through the courts, you know what's going to happen from the justice end of it. And I think all of us were just frustrated. And finally, one furniture salesman in Bellevue over here came up with an impossible deadline, 15 days to come up with enough names on a petition to put it to the voters in the fall. And by golly, I think he needed 120-some thousand signees, and he ended up in 15 days, or less than that, over 700,000.
Wow, he must have been organized.
One guy spearheaded this thing, yep. And he kind of...
...on top of it, and he had a guy to do it. That's fantastic. What was the issue again, that they raised their salaries? 40%. Yeah. What does your governor make now? 35,000?
Well, it was raised. I think his salary was something like 20,000, and he's going to boost it up to about 30,000. And oh. The same with the other, about 4 or 5 other electors that had boosted
salaries. Now, that's the reason I ask is because in Minnesota, we just went the opposite way, had a long study of our executive pay structure, and the recommendations came out to raise them, and our governor just went from 35 to 50. And that made a lot of sense because they couldn't get anybody to run the government. They had to get his salary up so that he'd get the heads of the departments up. So we didn't fight about that.
It's interesting because our government mandated, I don't know, 5.5% increase or so in salaries, state employees, yeah. Schools, yeah. And so forth, and then they come out with this big grandiose increase, and that just doesn't make sense.
Sounds like the way they did it helps your cause. That's really interesting, because it really amazes you what can happen. You know, it's just almost, you get that feeling of power when you see yourself doing something like that, one of those revolts, and things can really happen.
I'm sure that's going to be voted out in the fall.
Sure. I saw a group in, a Dyna in Minneapolis, or in the Twin Cities. They got things organized. Somebody mentioned something about the skepticism of everybody going in. And I follow very closely the public opinion polls that concerning the attitudes that people have about institutions and the and what surprises me is the attitudes, for instance, towards business corporations by business executives have been going down. You know, it's just kind of crazy. The churches. I think probably the lowest one that's fallen the most is I wish I had those charts with me. I didn't bring them, but it's either business or government. But the church too has suffered in a drop in schools. Yes, everything. You just name it. It's gone down and significantly. It's a large drop.
What again is the study? They
ask questions about how, you know. It's a measure of trust or confidence in institutions, educational institutions, business institutions, religious, mm-hmm. and there's a whole list of them. In fact, it'd be fun to have a seminar about that, because there's a funny thing happening. And then you go by age brackets. The younger people have dropped the most in the last 10 years. The age ladder, the older people have had the least amount of drop, but they've had a very significant drop too in confidence. And some people are saying that's an underlying drop in confidence in our country, which will lead to apathy or has led to apathy, and that's why it's so hard to get things organized.
I think one of the reasons for this is there's so many issues that when you stand and try and decide which issue you're going to give your energy to, you just kind of become this full of despair and say, what's the use?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So many things are important. You can't do everything.
Wasn't this kind of with the advent of consumerism as it became strong, spearheaded by Nader? Didn't this thing kind of all happen at that
time? Yeah, it all happened at about the same time. He got going. That's kind of anachronism, isn't it? Here's this guy taking off like mad and everybody becoming kind of cynical about things. Of course, I think cynicism feeds a group like that and makes them strong. It's always fun to watch him. Everybody cheers him on. Go get him.
He fed on that tremendously.
Go get General Motors. That's kind of fun.
What about the churches? Political influence. You talk about not having much clout in the religion, and the people that we share most of our values and ideals with the ones that we worship. So, what about the church working as a political influence? And then, counter to that, the recent new requirements of the IRS and the church constitution is not.
What our church is doing now, I know some of the things, but I don't know very many of them. Anybody know? Or can't you do anything as a church?
Well, the new IRS regulation, if it were strictly applied, would mean you better not do anything except sing things and pray.
I know the churches are coming after corporations to make them shape up. You've heard about that, of course, where they own large, churches own an awful lot of stock. And they began to start thinking about voting their stock or investing in corporations that do things socially responsible. And you can get a list of companies put out by different organizations that are socially responsible, and the churches are really pushing hard. Our corporation has a visit every week from some church body or some church-related group wants to know what we're doing. And we have a standard pitch that we give to them to show what we do, and then they give us some sort of a rating. that is very effective. But again, that's kind of why I watch. People can start, they do some things then. They go out and start a couple projects and saying, yeah, we're doing this, that, and the other thing. And it's a lot, all of this public relations. It's very difficult to tell what an institution is doing.
But what about the church going into business, as many of our churches are?
Well, our churches are pretty big businesses.
Yes. Owning
I think the church,
large condominiums, large discount houses, properties.
Where did the money from all of this business go?
Back to the people in the Mormon church.
Back to the who?
People.
I believe for example, in Seattle, when the Boeing Corporation went down, didn't an awful lot of money get brought into Seattle at that time?
Well, I know the support of the food bank program.
Well, isn't it, the Mormons are known to say that we take care of our own and that there are no Mormons on welfare. I don't know whether it's true or not, but I mean, this is it.
Well, I'd be interested in knowing where the money from the Lutheran Church owned businesses is there.
What are the Lutheran?
I don't know. That's where I'm, my question.
We own a publishing house, don't we? Is that a
Concordia?
Anybody know?
Yes,
publishing
yes,
houses?
Yes.
Those are independent businesses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A church-owned business has to pay taxes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was just a big hassle about that. They just started paying taxes, though, didn't they? Excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's not a church-owned business.
No. I don't think so.
Doesn't that depend on whether they're a profit-making business or not? Whether they pay taxes or not?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, a church can...
It's hard to qualify for a non-profit status. Even if you're a church, you have to do certain things. It's very difficult to get that. So I don't suppose those public houses are.
They are.
They're profit-making, right. Yeah.
Yes. I think part of that is you going around and around
Is that right?
Yeah.
From the state, huh? We haven't had that problem in Minnesota yet. In fact, they encourage that to happen. We're having a hard time getting congregations to do that. They like this 2 hours a week business that Rich is talking about.
Well, getting back to a church participating or having a voice in political matters, I doubt that you could find a voice in the church. In other words, I don't think the church has a voice, has an opinion that can be supported generally in the church. I don't think in this room, we took one issue, you'd find a wise split of opinion. So it may not be that the church probably has the responsibility of getting people to think right, and then they'll make up their own mind.
But how to get there? That's the problem.
I know that when the National Council of Churches makes proclamations, I often wonder who are they really? Who are these people? Who's the National Council of Churches? Who makes up who comes up with the decisions and what they're going to support? I don't know. I mean, does anybody know?
And does anybody listen to
a small group of men or what? But the churches themselves don't vote and send a delegate to tell them what to do.
Well, but the
individuals,
the
nomination,
have an election, represent the church, and that's how
the power is best person, and the power is
represented.
I see. So it's a Republican form of government.
You know, from the process.
But it doesn't mean it's concerned with the church. I want to go to this church corporation being taxed, thing come up, because I read an article in Time or Newsweek about one of these TV evangelist churches, I can't remember what it was, Church of the Eternal Flame or something like that, and they had a huge corporation, and they were just building like this, because they call themselves a non-profit organization, and because they put all the profit right back into the corporation, and somehow they got around calling themselves non-profit because they did this, and so they weren't taxed too. Besides putting all their money back in, they were just building a huge empire practically, and that wasn't a half a year ago. I didn't think so. I mean,
they nailed it too, though.
Okay.
But I guess when we get around to it, we're saying that we had to have money in order to do things with the government, and the church can't use its money to lobby with the government. Is that right? Is that where we ended up?
But they have supported individual causes. Some church groups have.
I don't know.
One church group gave some money to Angela Davis's
Yeah, that's non-political, I think. That's
trusting plenty of members.
Yeah. But you can't, I don't believe you can support a presidential campaign because they support common cause. I don't know. Is there a lawyer around it? What is that? I sure don't.
What about, you know, the new Supreme Court decision that each local community can determine its own values or its own, you know, what's acceptable? Fair, not. Doesn't the church have some responsibility to work within that community to, you know, define the laws which will be applied within that community?
What?
It's kind of scary. In some churches, really scary.
By and large, as my observation is very small, but by and large, I don't think the church has been very effective as a political instrument. And I think that's partly because of the laws, and partly because of what you said, you can't get everybody in the congregation to agree which way you're going to go. It's not their business. Yes, sir.
But the one thing that they could do would be to at least take an active interest in those issues that are going on at the local level and make people aware of those issues.
Right. Like that tax on order.
At least I could do that. Sure. Too often, that's too secular.
You'd never have them all agree, but even within a local congregation, even saying 70% of our people feel this way, you know, and making them move.
At least, yeah, just a major part of the problem is getting the education done, getting the issues out so that people can vote.
Or even getting a determination that the church is a part of our political process. Even if this could be done so that people would begin to think, as a Christian, I'm still involved with what's happening politically. Because this isn't really determined, I don't think, in our country today.
But do you feel that many ministers still feel that they should not, while they're up in the pulpit, get up and say, you people, it's your responsibility towards your government to vote tomorrow. At least say something. I mean, don't go get up and give a sermon and not give us some guidance for the next week, except for what we might be able to say, won't read in the Bible.
But this is being run into the ground currently today. I'm not a minister, but I know I can kind of feel what they think about this too. They can stand up there and say, you know, go out there and vote, but the people that they're talking to perhaps have no more information on that issue than they did before they said go out and vote.
Yeah.
And this is the problem that we have.
But they could say something a little more than just get out and vote. But I sometimes feel that they don't like to deal with the things that pertain to today.
Well, in our church, we have a service, and then right after the service, it's a relatively short service, was it 45 minutes? And then they have a forum, like we're doing right now. And they bring in very controversial things. But I don't ever remember any political stuff being brought in. And that's an ideal spot, because we just lay out issues. Venereal disease, marijuana, the whole, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Age group of your people?
It's young, yeah, up to 50.
Well, how many people come?
Oh, it's really loaded. The place is large. I mean,
what would be controversial about venereal disease?
Well, it's not really controversial, but at least it's used to be. But I mean, they deal with things like that. It's not all a religion, what I meant. But it could happen. But we had a young pastor who started pressing some political stuff, and boy, he gets zapped good. You know?
Yeah.
Wow. A couple guys quit the congregation, and they lost some money, and that was it. You know, back to the dollar.
Is that the only church in your area that's done that?
I don't think so. No, it's one of those areas. No, it's just sort of the process. People are so used to going through this thing that they just do it every Sunday. It's part of the routine. They feed them some coffee, and that gets them in there, and they sit down, and off they go. They're mostly Scandinavian.
How many people participate on that basis?
Oh, I suppose we run, it's a large congregation. Where do we go, 1,000 on a Sunday? I suppose we have 3 services.
Well, it's all the kids are in Sunday school, the parents can go to
school. Yeah, there aren't that many adults. But
so there's 1,000 people that sit around like this and...
They're more like adults, maybe. Yeah, there are 3 services.
Oh,
and they break it up into smaller groups. So each group maybe has 150, 200.
You mean you have the service, say, 45 minutes long and then 15 minutes of discussion?
No, it's 45. More, another 45 of some sort of a program. And, sometimes
how can you get a discussion of 200 people?
Well, you can, but they're not very well. You can break down into discussion groups, which they have done. But you could at least expose people to the, you know, political issues that way anyway, as well as all the other things that we do. I'm sorry, you have your hand.
Well, I don't know if I'm out of line or not, but what do you think of pastors that have marched in parades and things with their robe on?
How fast
are they? Are they representing their church by doing that?
Oh, you mean the Vietnam thing? For
well, now, yeah. And there was Chicago. There was a march in Chicago that was ministers marched with their robes.
As I recall, ministers marched with Martin Luther King and his protest.
And there was the man who just made the formal impeachment proceedings for President Nixon was a priest. Okay, is he doing it for himself or his church? I don't know. I'm not.
When we talk about agreement, don't you think the church that preaches the gospel of forgiveness ought to be lobbying earnestly for amnesty at this point?
You want to stay here till midnight?
That's a good example of an issue.
Yeah, that's a good issue. Yeah, and you'd be polarized awful fast in this room, I bet you. Wouldn't take you long.
Seriously, though, our congregation in our group forum did discuss that.
Yeah.
And we did it for about 6 weeks. And we really crashed through it. And in the beginning, it was divided.
Yeah.
But when we pulled the group at the end of the session, I think I can say that it was unanimous that at least some forms of amnesty must be, right? That's just what we ought to be doing as a Christian nation.
I think if you do that in the church, you got to have something that we call in business a process consultant. That is someone who comes in from the outside and helps you search through the issues. There are techniques that you can use. That's really, we run into those kinds of issues all the time in business, and to prevent all these clashes that you get. We have someone in from the outside that can see him coming, and he'll separate you apart and start trying to get you to understand what's going on. Those are very dangerous things to do. I think that the process consultant role as a pastor is really important. We should talk about that too. There's Bill from Harvard here is doing his stuff on it. Is he here today? Anyway, he's really great on that. There's a role that a pastor could play in getting the congregation to look at issues and to come to some agreement or at least some amicable disagreement and maybe come to some real things that you can do.
I know. Well, I notice so often though in this type of, so often when there are discussions of this type of thing, it is very hard people to think in relationship, and so when things are discussed, often in the sense of they're taking isolated things and this type of thing, and not really thinking how one thing relates to another. Is that what you mean? The person that you bring in would be kind of as a related.
Quite often, when you get into a situation where you have two sides or three sides, if you look at it, you find out all three of them or two of them don't have all the facts and the data, as we say. And so you got to get them to trade data without killing each other. You know?
Yeah.
And they do that by playing games. They start playing games. I remember one I went through. I'm on the staff in the corporation, and there's a bunch of line guys, and we're always at each other all the time. And they started out by asking us to draw a vehicle that would describe the other group. And so we can get all the nasty things we want to say about them out in the open. They call that the garbage dump. You dump all the bad feelings you have about the other group first. And then you can start trading data and information, and pretty soon you find out usually that you're not so far apart. And almost all the time you can come to some reasonable agreement and a direction to go without splitting up. That's really an interesting thing. We've been doing it for years, but they call it by different names now. And all of us do it sometime. It's really fun to be that. An ombudsman is a process consultant. He listens to two guys and listens to two people, and they're arguing and going back and forth. And you have to wait until just the right moment when you can see they almost are at an agreement. And you step in and say, here's what I hear you guys saying. And if you do it just right, they'll... Yep, that's it, and they'll all come together. But if you do it too early or too late, you mess it up. it's a difficult skill. Yes, ma'am. Well, I wonder if that isn't a secondary objective of these things like Expo, whatever it is, 73 or things, where they're going to bring the gospel to everybody in the country and the world, and then they figure that if that happens, then other things are going to straighten themselves out naturally. I'm not familiar with that, but I think that's kind of what you said.
Yeah, because in a sense, it seems like the church uses the individual process, you know, the one-to-one. You change one person, then one person, and all like this, the pyramid kind of deal. But, like, couldn't the church in itself attack the bottom of the pyramid? You know? I mean, like, the bottom of the triangle? Because, like, if you start with one person, you know, like, you know, it works then, you know, which the church in a sense does now, and all these people, not like this. And you eventually get down to the bottom of the triangle where, you know, you have the democracy or whatever this is supposed to be, you know? And doesn't the church attack from the bottom?
Are you talking about individual church members blowing out the politicians and trying to change the system for them or not?
I don't know, that's what I'm asking. I'm asking whether this could happen.
Well, that latter one is a thing that we're really practicing today, I think. I mean, at least that seems to be the easiest way to get involved as a Christian, going out into the regular system and trying to do your thing. The church as a body doesn't seem to be, maybe it could. I don't know how it could do that, because I don't know the politics of the church. But it apparently might be a difficult thing.
I mean, it seems like this whole discussion is very intertwined, like with the money, the politics, the apathy, the disinterest in the church.
That's the whole point of a discussion like this. Otherwise, you have to have a lecture and questions in there.
We don't have any answers. That's yeah, in one of these forums, we don't come in here with any answers. But by trading ideas, not, you know, I've gotten a couple ideas that are answers to questions I had already tonight, just by, on some issues, some things.
To what extent are our pastors being trained to either be process consultants?
I don't know. I think
people start thinking. I think there's
I think they get some natural training in that without it being called that, because most of them are very good at it. The thing that I guess could make it better is to emphasize it more, you know, and make a formalized program out of it. I think that a pastor, to be successful, has to be a good process consultant, because he spends so much time in problems between groups and people. He wouldn't succeed very long out there unless he is good. But it really, really helps to know the theory of this stuff, which they've just developed.
Maybe one way she might be trying to look at this is a group of people in the church. We should further our cause by promoting men from our group to be involved in the political field instead of supporting the man, say, who is not a Christian.
Well,
to support the man who is a Christian.
Let me ask a question to you then.
Okay.
Could you individually support Mark Hatfield?
I do.
Because he's a Christian?
Yes, and I feel that he feels that his decisions are based on his belief in God.
Well, I think some Christians might get hung up on him because he's anti-Nixon and anti-war.
Well, he has to have an opinion.
Well, I realize that.
Are Christians supposed to be for war?
Well, I don't know.
He has to have an opinion. And he certainly voices his opinion.
Well, in this case, it's a choice between Mark Hatfield and Wayne Morton.
A choice?
In the political theory arena, I think one thing that we could do much more of, that our pastors could do much more of, which we neglect to do, and that's to pray for those who are in positions of leadership, whether you agree with them politically or not. And if we all earnestly did pray that they would be aware of the moral issues of each thing that comes up and make their decisions wisely, maybe that would help.
I think you've got...
But that's one thing we never discuss.
No, we don't.
People, but that's one of the things that a Christian should do and should believe in.
If you really believe what we talk about around here, that's your greatest influence of all.
Maybe Mary could lead us in a prayer about our politics.
Could do.
About it.
But
I'm just going to say that, you know, we do this anew, and this is one reason why we have an effect on a lot of people.
I just thought of something. The hymnary has a prayer for politicians in there, doesn't it? I've noticed lately that we keep skipping that. I don't think I've gone through that for 5 years, personally. It's just our congregation, I think. Right? We really avoid politics. Yeah, we don't even pray for them.
I'll bet you there's no church represented here that has had a public prayer with regard to Watergate.
Yes, we have. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We prayed for it, and the Fullers
of God
congregation prayed about it. We prayed about our country, and prayed particularly about the Watergate situation, what we were involved in. I can't believe the
church is going to pray about that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Huh? Yeah. The thing is that everybody thinks the Watergate is something new. It happened back in the time of Peter.
Well, I know, but we're not going to.
Well, I know, but yet on the other hand.
But we're talking about influencing the government, and is that a practical way of doing it? Through prayer? Well,
I think just what you brought up is a kind of thing that a lot of people feel in America, and that's apathy about this situation. Mm-hmm. And they say, you talk to them about, what do you think about Watergate? Well, it happens all the time. It happens in both parties. Big deal. Well, I think it's a dang big deal. And I think that we should try and clear it up. And if the Democrats have done the same thing, I should think we should have them investigated. Clear them up, too. But I think that kind of an idea, it's happened before, it's always going to happen. I think that's a bad way to look at it.
I've heard too many people speak that way, and it really makes me sick because, and a different age bracket, and it really appalls me to hear some people complain because their favorite soap opera isn't on TV, or because they're spending money to investigate, and their favorite thing is to say, well, it's been going on both sides for so long, why make a big stink out of it now? Well, I'm personally very glad they're finally doing something, and I agree, I don't care whose side it's on, I'm glad they're doing something about it. It's about time we shake a few bushes.
Here's a great demonstration of the influence of people over their government, really, even though there are just a small number of senators sitting there. They're still influenced by the letters that are written to them to some extent. Even though that's a lot of that propaganda too. A lot of what? And phone calls. Yeah, but you didn't answer my question about do you think prayer is a practical way of...
The lady over there said no.
No, but, okay.
I disagree with her. I think it's an eminently practical way of...
I said prayer didn't have any effect?
Maybe you misunderstood my question. I said, do you think prayer is a practical way of influencing, well, government in this case?
I think that prayer is the first and most important thing, but then we also have to act.
Yeah, but I mean, just that by itself. You know, some people have been saying we don't do much about that, we don't think about much about it, and yet that seems like that might be the most important thing, as you say.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
I did too.
Glad you said I said it, because I wanted to clear it up.
I think we've been talking a little bit about influencing and stuff. And how about public opinion polls? And who runs public opinion polls? And how sure are we that they're doing the right job? I mean, when a public opinion poll comes up and says 70% of the people support the president and 30, you know, and whatever other percentages there are, that sways a heck of a lot of people.
Yes.
And I think in elections too, that's really true. And I think there were situations which have been discovered that the Nixon, whatever it is, set out to try and influence people that way.
They manipulated the polls.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Or they made their own polls.
Right.
And manipulated the data. Yeah.
Are there any kind of controls on these?
Yeah, there are controls. I run opinion polls, and yet I have a difficult time dealing with the data. There are all kinds of things that you can do to, you know, public opinion polls have become very much better than they used to be, but they still have problems because the sampling techniques, you know, have error, and not many people understand what the error rates mean, and they mean a great deal. Although these large ones that seem to tend, for instance, to test the how people feel about the president, they're probably pretty accurate. But the thing I worry about is people getting in there and purposefully manipulating them. And that's easy to do. It really is. You can get in there, somebody that's handling that data that just doesn't like the way it's coming out can make a change, and there's no way we know that. That's dangerous stuff. That's like manipulating the votes, you know, counting them over again, things like that. And you're right, there's a real issue that is being faced all over the country. Universities like to talk about that a lot, and that is, do the public opinion polls really influence, how much do they influence our elections?
I think they do a lot.
Yeah, they certainly do. Yes, sir?
Did you make a statement just a minute ago that letter writing to who the senators was effective?
Well, no, I don't want to get branded with that, but sometimes it does help. What I had in mind was the thing that you alluded to, that like during the Cambodian bombing at Christmas time, the president was talking about all the letters that came in, and we come to find out that they really weren't letters at all from people that he had his own people write in, and they buried all the other letters they got somewhere.
I wonder if it is more pressure groups are more effectual than even letter writing. Even in our state, our legislators keep saying, write your letters, let us know how you feel. I wonder if this is really this important, if they really read this.
No, a senator or a representative has a list of names in his office usually. I guess this gentleman over here can tell you more about it than I know, but from what I've heard, a lobbyist is very important. letter writers who have given given money will receive letters back, and maybe they'll even be, you know, special type. If you haven't shown any interest in the political process and they don't know you, your letters usually get tossed in the waste paper basket, from what I understand. They count them, though. You know, they take polls that way on issues. And it's either yes or no. They divide them into piles, and so they don't always go down the drain. But I do a little lobbying, and I've been in our state senator's office when we were trying to talk to him about an issue, and this had to do with foreign trade. And our lobbyist went in there, and the senator said, you know, I can listen to you all the time, but you're not really important. If the president of your company comes in and or even calls me, I'll listen to him, but I'm not going to listen to you. And so the president called him, and he listened to him, you know. But then he voted against the other way anyway, so. Senator Mondale. I was on the...
I understand you to say that senators don't answer letters?
Oh, they answer letters. Well, sometimes they don't. They don't always. No,
I sent Senator Packwood and Senator Hatfield letters here a couple, 3 months ago to the school of nursing in Portland, the closing one, and asked them if they couldn't help appropriate some money to keep it open. And I got personal letters back from them.
No, they have a staff that really deals with that. But if you're just writing a letter of protest, you know, they're more likely to tout it and dump it or just dump it.
Well, I think it does help us to write letters to your company.
Oh, it
I
does.
I think if they notice that they're all form letters, they don't pay attention.
No. But the thing I just brought up really comes down to the guts of the thing. If your senator probably made up his mind already what he's going to do on an issue like this foreign trade thing, and no matter how much pressure you bring to bear, unless it's just a phenomenal amount, he's not going to change his mind. The one person isn't going to have any influence. Even if someone who's contributed a significant amount of money to him may not have it. Depends on the issue.
There's a lot of swapping of votes too that I understand. Those are you back me and I'll back you.
Yeah. Well, that's a strange process.
That's part of compromise. Whether it's right or wrong, that's part of the compromise.
Part of the system.
No, that's part of the democracy. That's the way the thing was set up. Not everybody's going to think the same way about enough issues. Sometimes they'll just trade things off, whether it's right or wrong. Whether they trade them off for the right reasons is another question. But I don't argue the trading off of it.
No, we sure have covered a lot of subjects there. It really has been. It was 10:30 in an hour and a half, and I guess that's enough for any subject. I don't know. When I get tired of sitting down, I think that's about time to call it today. Maybe we can stand up and talk some more, but I guess that's about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's 3:05 or thereabouts. I can't tell whether my watch is working right or not, but I think it's somewhere after 3:00.
2 minutes.
2 minutes? Okay. We got a range of about 10 minutes.